Blog Talk Radio.
Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I'm your host, Susan Larison-Danz, and today I am in just such a space of joy to be bringing on this program a truly amazing guest, and his name is Stuart Pierce. Stuart is very well known as a voice coach, a sound healer, and what I came to call, reading some of his work, an angelic visionary. And I have to say that, honestly, preparing for this show, and I told him this before I even brought him on the show here today, and I will in a minute, it was somewhat circular, I have to say, because his work is all about speaking from the heart and not being afraid. And here I am, a radio host spontaneously doing a blog talk radio show that I've been doing for a while, thinking, oh my, this amazing man is coming on this show today, a speech coach. And yet his very work is helping me, even in this moment, as I prepare to bring him on the show. Let me tell you just a little bit more about Stuart. He is the author of The Alchemy of Voice, Transform and Enrich Your Life Through the Power of Your Voice. And he shares some very helpful techniques regarding how you can use the power of your voice and really reduce the fear that you're feeling in all kinds of circumstances and enhance your life in general. Stuart does have an amazing career. He even worked with Princess Diana, Vanessa Redgrave, Anita Roddick. He has a career that spans three decades in which he was the head of voice at the Webber Douglas Academy. He was the master of voice at Shakespeare's Globe. But he is also a man who speaks so much from the heart. And he has a new book coming out called Angels and the Keys to Paradise, Ancient Egyptian Codes to Open Your Door to Heaven. And one of the things that I'd like to say before I bring him on is I am so very blessed to know that he's worked with Richard Crookes, who is someone I synchronistically encountered years ago and actually did the artwork for The Frontier Beyond Fear. So without further delay, I just want to bring the wonderful Stuart Pierce on the air and welcome him to the show. Welcome, Stuart. It's so nice to have you here.
Well, thank you, my darling. How wonderful it is to be here. So thank you for inviting me on to your radio program.
Well, it is such an honor and yet also a blessing because truly you speak through the heart, Stuart, and that really helps us all to do the same. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
Now, I wonder if you could talk to us, Stuart, about the angels and how you came to know them and your childhood. I wonder if we could start at the beginning because your childhood is fascinating, Stuart, both with regards to the sound aspects of it and the angelic dimension.
Mm. Well, what do I say? firstly, I've always seen spirit, so I've always been aware of the supernatural world or the preternatural world. And as a young child, I became very aware of the elemental force around me, meaning the nature spirits around me, and the angels. Excuse me. I'm just back from running a retreat in Egypt, and I have a little bit of Egyptian dust in my throat.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully it won't plague this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful conversation. But listeners, if you hear me croak, then, you know, forgive me. It's just overheating. So as I was saying, I was very aware of the supernatural world, of multidimensional world, of the metaphysical world, as a child, and saw angels not as human beings with wings, but as orbs of light. And this was 60 years ago, so I've been around for some time.
Yeah.
Therefore, seeing orbs of light, 60, 50 years ago, was an unusual thing, and I talked about what I saw, and I soon learned that very few people saw what I was seeing. So I've always been aware of the fact that this is there. I thought everybody saw what I was seeing. So, of course, I talked about it very amply, and as I was just referring to, I suddenly realized that people weren't really tuning into the vibrations that I was tuning into, and therefore my information was dealt with through scorn and through dismay and so forth and so forth. So I shut up. And got on with life, which was slightly troubled, not because of my physical circumstances, but because I tried to do what the teachers at school wanted me to do, and I found it very difficult to do what they wanted me to do, because evidently I was thinking and feeling in a very different way from the way that they were encouraging me to think and feel. And what I'm referring to here is the paradigm of doing, 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 doing. Whereas evidently I was a very right brain individual. I soon became aware of the fact that I saw sound, literally saw sound, and so it was very difficult to then consume myself within the printed word or the written word. Because as soon as I did this, the possibility of what I was seeing as the creative potential within the universe was suddenly frozen into the moment that we call now. And I wasn't able to really begin to read until much later in my life, towards 12, 13, 14 years of age, and indeed discovered how to read through singing. So I got on with life, and I found a way through because, you can see from my resume that the insecurities of early life seemingly have been healed and worked through me through therapy, and I've been able to find a way of developing a linguistic or a language with the world that apparently people seem to be able to respond to. However, if I go back to your original question, which was about the angels, when I was a young man, I decided that the easiest thing to do was to tell stories, which I did. And people, for the first time, gave me a lot of approbation, a lot of approval. So I continued telling those stories, but telling those stories within the context of theater, and became an actor, and worked as an actor for about 8 or 9 years, which led me to the United States of America and Broadway and so forth and so forth. And then something very extraordinary happened because I was about to make a movie. So I had my first big opportunity to break into mainstream entertainment industry in the United States of America. And as I was packing up, leaving New York City to go to Los Angeles, the telephone rang. And here was my brother saying, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, you know what I'm doing. I have a brother who's just over a year older than myself. And he said, "Well, you better sit down because I have some information for you. You need to know that Mum has terminal cancer." Well, it took me a moment to simply feel, well, I can no longer continue doing what I had planned to do, which was to go to Los Angeles and make this movie. I need to come back to Europe, to London, where our home has always been, and nurse my mother. This was 1979. So I came back, and she lasted for a year, and then she passed. And when she passed, a window opened within me where through the grief and the horror of what was taking place, because she was only 59, 60 when she died, that an opportunity of huge growth was intimated for me, and it was largely created by the fact that she came to me one day while I was sorting out her estate. She came into the room, and the whole of the room became illumined by her presence. And, of course, the way that we deduce this is by a very, very deep sense of knowing. And I heard, now is time for absolute joy. I will always be with you. And in those moments, I felt the intuition that I'd experienced as a child fully awaken. And so I began to open the filters that allow us to feel clairaudience or clairvoyance or clairsentience, and began to see the world again. What this all led to, I'll sort of skip forward with the biography, but what this led to
it's very interesting.
Was the opportunity of meeting a very extraordinary person who was one of the world's leading voice directors, and this was the voice director of the Royal Shakespeare Company, who gave me a job as a voice coach, because after all, I was an actor that had displaced himself within Hollywood, and so therefore my agent had left me, my manager had left me, and 20th Century Fox really didn't want to see me again.
Uh-huh.
So this very extraordinary lady stepped into my path and a huge door opened where I became a voice coach. And she trained me through the first few years of my professional life as a voice coach and introduced me to people like Margaret Thatcher, who I helped very considerably at the beginning of her career.
Oh, my.
Then to skip forward further into 1987. By this time, of course, I was working extensively on people's bodies because our voices of purely physical mechanisms that we use to communicate the way that we think and the way we feel. And therefore, by working on our voices, as you've already intimated, we start to work on the inner person, the inner energy of the person, and therefore really what we're talking about is soul.
Yeah.
So I started working on people's souls and offering them information about the way that they felt themselves to be disharmonic or held or blocked or whatever the terminology was. And as a result of the information that I offered, many people awakened to the power of their voices, awakened to the power of their magnificence, and were able to cure the fear or the inadequacy or the lack of self-confidence or whatever it was. And so I realized that the intuition that I was using was actually clairvoyant, because
yes,
suddenly I began to see many of the spirits that I'd seen as a child. And this led me to 1987, where I was invited by a friend who had a crystal store to Glastonbury in Somersetshire, which is the heart chakra of the world. And he invited me down because it was a very unique event, a festival known as the Harmonic Convergence, where a very unique astrological configuration happened in the heavens, which is referred to by the Mayan peoples as an opportunity of opening a portal or a window that would be the beginning preparation for the great event of December the 21st, 2012. So it effectively was 25 years before what we experienced in December of 2012 at the end of the precession of the equinoxes. And there I was reading for people in his store, in his crystal shop, and felt very fatigued by the energies, these powerful energies that were zooming into Glastonbury. And so I went and sat on the tour, which is a very high hill, and began meditating, surrounded by hundreds of people. And as I meditated, I began to feel a very unique presence in my field, and I heard 12 extraordinary harmonics. And being baffled or, you know, deeply surprised by these sounds that I was hearing, I opened my eyes, and in front of me were 12 orbs of light, these 12 vast orbs of different colors. And I heard within my consciousness, we are the angels of Atlantis, and we are going to give you a temple of sound healing, which you will use and call the Alchemy of Voice. So forgive me, that's a rather long-winded story, but it leads us to the full answer of what you were asking, is about how did I meet the angels.
Yes, yes. Yeah, well, I'm happy that you told it. And, you know, as you're telling this story, Stuart, I can't help but wonder, for so many of us, your path is all about authenticity and finding the heart space, and you have such a brilliant, as one might call, conventional career, on one hand, although I don't know how you really label conventional. On the other hand, you're having this amazing awakening to some very mystical things. And so my question is, and I think this will help all of us, is can you try to tell us how you've integrated this and walked this amazing path where you can balance the two and integrate them together?
Well, I had a very early start, didn't I?
Yes.
Because I saw the metaphysical world, but I soon began to realize that people whom I cared about who were very considerable within the nature of the United Kingdom, because my parents worked for the British Royal Family,
yes.
that other people didn't see what I was seeing. So there was the possibility, therefore, of living a double life,
yes.
A sort of cloak and dagger life, you know. And after all, that's how many people have lived their lives under the restraints of patriarchy or, you know, some of the cruelties, the perpetration within the substance of totalitarianism. So it's not an unusual thing for we human beings to live a double life. Of course there was pain. Of course there were challenges and compromises. But I felt it was very important to just continue being faithful and authentic and honest to that I was feeling, as well as being an interactive possibility within the 3D world of helping people in power, of helping people through transformation, and on many occasions helping people to choose healing as a movement back to wholeness. Now, what's successfully happened, as I see through the gestation of my life in relation to the co-creativity of our planet, is that we've reached a stage where the vibration of our planet is moving onto such a high frequency that the conversation that you and I are now having 25 years ago was the opportunity was slim. And yet today, the opportunity to have this self-same conversation is literally like wildfire all over our planet, where more and more people are waking to the substance of their soul or waking to spiritual intelligence and beginning to recognize that there is a way of being able to live a life of abundance through love.
Yes.
And therefore, I've made certain choices at this stage of my life, which is that I've resigned all my establishment positions to be free to be able to move around the world very easily and to teach the angels substance. So that's what brings us to this conversation, you know, because I write books, and that gets me to move around the world and meet fantastic people. And, you know, this year alone, the first month I was in Hong Kong, and then February, March, I was in the United States, and I've just come back from Egypt. And next week I shall be in Los Angeles, and then Indianapolis, and so forth and so forth. Chicago in the summer with the great expo in Chicago. And then September I'll be in New York. And then, you know, I think November I'm in Ireland and then India. excuse me.
It's okay. If you need to get a drink, feel
fun.
Free.
Yeah, I have a glass of water next to me.
Yes.
It's just, you know, it's 9 o'clock in the evening here, and I've been working really hard all day.
I understand.
My voice is just a little tired. But I couldn't resist the temptation of speaking with you.
Oh, well, that's so sweet. Thank you. I'm honored. Truly. The question that comes to mind here, maybe this will bring you back a little bit to those days when you were working conventionally, but when you work, I think that sometimes, even when I gave the intro to this show, I mean, these amazing people, and yet when you worked with these amazing people, I have a feeling, Stuart, you work with them as people, because amazing people are at their core just like all the rest of us. And I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about that as well, how you're able to connect, how we're able to connect, and if you've always been able to do this in the way that you're doing it now.
Well, I suppose the indication of where I was born and whom I was born to, you know, high-ranking royal servants, gives a sort of indication of the fact that although I've always been in awe of mighty people,
yes,
particularly when I was a child, that actually it was evidently part of my destiny to be wrapped in the environment of greatness, so that I could become aware of the fact that at the core of greatness is, particularly in relation to Queen Elizabeth II, is an extraordinary nobility, where the highest thought is always thought, the greatest grace is always used. And the noblesse, the, you know, the ability of noblesse oblige, which is to be kindly to one's servants, and therefore to be essentially authentically very human, has always been there. So I was aware of the immense pomp and circumstance of greatness and seeing what actually happens publicly. But then I was also aware of what happened privately.
Yeah.
And the way that when Queen Elizabeth, for example, as the woman would return to her own private quarters, the shoes would be slipped off. She would sit on the sofa and watch TV and drink tea.
Of course.
Just like any other human being. And so I was actually able to appreciate the formality and the protocol of the pomp and circumstance, but also that actually innately within the form was the feeling of a very extraordinarily honest woman and, you know, all the other people that were attendant to that energy. And so that I feel, was a preparation to move me forward to work with Margaret and then to meet Diana and all the other illustrious. You know, these are just a few of the people that I've worked with. For me, it's very ordinary. I know for a lot of people it seemed to be very extraordinary, but I've just been turning up and having conversations. And for me, as you can probably hear from the bubbling nature of my creativity, there's an innocent within me that just turns up for a conversation. Mm-hmm. And I believe that all successful conversations or all successful communication is based on the response you get, meaning that if you get the response you want, you know you're having a very successful conversation. If you don't get the response you want, then change strategy until you get it. And, of course, I'm opening that up simply because, as we know, when we're trying to find innate, authentic, honest conversations with people, people play games.
Yes.
Games to do with power, games to do with manipulation, you know, games to do with dishonesty, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the question is, do you wish to stand and continue the conversation? And if you feel it's innately dishonest and there's no way of being able to re-strategize it, then the easiest thing to do is to go somewhere else to have an even more pleasant conversation rather than staying around. And so I've always had a willfulness about me that has taken me from a situation that is challenging. I've always left, hopefully, as graciously as possible, sometimes by showing a little bit of anger, but always in relation to the honesty of the situation, and moving somewhere else to generate a totally different force. So, you know, what I'm referring to here is that whatever we see without is within. And actually what we're here to do is to optimize our creative energy through love and joy, to find as many vibrational matches as we can. And that's what conversation for me is all about.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And the angels have always been there to help me. So yes. I've always seen, even in moments of raw despair or in tribulation where it's like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? The angels have always been there saying, just keep believing in hope. Just try again and all will be well, because all is well in divine providence.
Yes. Have you encountered many synchronicities along your path that help you?
Oh, my God, so many.
Understatement
of
the year, perhaps, as a question.
Yeah, so many.
Yes.
I refer to them as being the wheel of fortune turning, and it sometimes goes clonk, and they're mighty synchronicities, which, of course, is really a statement of the authorship of our own soul, allowing us to feel a meeting point between our own destiny and the element of weight, space, and time that brings the individual or the activity to us.
Yes.
But yes, you know, other people call it luck. I call it fortune, not in the sense of that there's a ruling presence there that we have no conversation with. I believe that Lady Fortune is constantly saying, please talk to me. What do you want?
That's a wonderful way of looking at it. And you know, when you talk about how your life came together, you know, in a way, Stuart, what a blessing that you had this background where you could talk to these people in a very honest way so you could truly help them. Because a lot of times, I mean, people might not be able to approach someone in the royal family so easily, whereas it's as if your higher self set you on this path, or you set yourself on this path at a higher level. And that's really a beautiful thing, because I sense these people really needed you to be present with them fully.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes it's just simply a question of being, not doing anything, but just being there.
Yeah, yeah.
And developing, you know, developing intimacy through trust and belief and faith until such time where perhaps a more overt conversation can be opened, because one can start doing something. Because as soon as we start trusting somebody through what they be, we can open ourselves up to the possibility of them facilitating a process for us.
Yes.
And it's, you know, the life that I've spent in the entertainment industry has brought forth this very considerably, because actors are very immensely sensitive beings. You know, right at the very core of their credence is the truth of feeling statement. So there they are making it look really, really easy, but actually the job is not easy in the slightest.
Yeah.
Can you imagine standing in front of a 1,500 people making love every night? I mean, geez, it's crazy.
It's a passionate thing. And you know, I was talking to an actor. I was at an expo, and he was helping me, actually. He sat at my booth for a very long time. In fact, I can even name him. He hasn't been on this show yet. His name is Dean Hagelin. He was on the X-Files TV show long ago. And he kept coaching me all along in life. And he kept telling me how the lessons that he learned as an actor helped him to be comfortable in life. And, you know, I was more insecure. We all have our insecurities, and I'm still working through some of mine. But his words come back to me, and I realized we could all do with some training as an actor, in a way, because it teaches you to be comfortable with yourself, it seems. It's a very core emotional thing that you get in touch with. And so I get what you're saying.
Well, absolutely. I can do nothing but agree with what
you're
saying.
Well, you just
know, in order to be somebody else, we need to know exactly who we are. Otherwise, as we see with some very extraordinary talents, like the late lamented Philip Seymour Hoffman, that there's this very narrow line between the integrity or the integration of self in a very healthy way with the possibility of shape-shifting into something else, and not being able to live it. And I think that's what happened for Philip. Another actor like this who's immensely sensitive. I mean, they're very extraordinary people, because they move between the worlds, you see. There's a shamanic element about them. The other person was Daniel Day-Lewis, who, when I first worked with him, he was just out of theater school, you know, where he trained as an actor. And he was playing Hamlet at the Royal National Theatre, and he saw his own father's ghost on stage, not Hamlet's father's ghost, not Hamlet's father. He saw his own father's ghost. And, you know, that meant that he could not continue with the work and sought refuge for some considerable amount of time. And then when he returned, of course, he returned to a movie career and has never really stepped on a stage again. But as a result of that, his destiny has woven a spell, because we've had the joy and the honor and the distinction of watching him play these extraordinary, mostly men, on screen, you know, including his last tribute, which, of course, was Abe Lincoln, which was one of the most extraordinary personifications in many ways, because he shapeshifts. It's a very old-fashioned word. But he, you know, he doesn't impersonate. He literally expands his own flesh into the flesh of the being. So his cells change. His molecules change. And he becomes this being, just as a shaman becomes a medicine animal, or becomes a certain state to be a gatekeeper into the underworld. You know, just very extraordinary. Very extraordinary.
Yeah.
And being around people like this, you know, I found it fascinating over the years. And sometimes, to be honest, not just surprising, but quite frightening, to see how they change in front of you, that something very magical happens. But the individual that you know and love from rehearsal is no longer there. the characters there. And of course, as a, you know, as an emotionally intelligent, mature individual, in that moment, you leave that person alone because you know that they're called to greater things.
Yes. Yes.
Rather than worrying about, well, where's my friend? You know, the point is your friend will return. It's just that your friend is about remarkable, remarkable, life-changing, quickening work.
Yes.
And then they get up on stage or on set, and they just look fantastic. In fact, a very, very famous actress. I remember once she had a very famous actress, American actress, who was working in the United States, in the United Kingdom, rather. And she had a vocal problem, and I was called in to help. And it was all way in to understand how I could help this lady, who was a supreme craftswoman of her trade, you know, had been acting for a long time and sang and, you know, the leading person. She would have to remain nameless, of course. But And I remember saying to her, well, what is it you want to do to your audience? And there was this extraordinary silence. And then she said, I want to rearrange my audience on a cellular level.
Wow.
It was an extraordinary statement. Now, the only way to do this is actually through the physicality of one's being. And I suppose this draws us back into the might of the way you can probably hear when I'm using my voice, that I'm using it in all sorts of different degrees and different areas of my body to elicit a certain feeling that I can then communicate. And so, yeah, I mean, if we go into the mystical purpose of our voices, and not just from a creative but also from a healing point of view, if we can find our note, because we each have a signature note, which is the song of our soul, then automatically that note begins to weave an extraordinary symphony through us, where the resonance of our being opens to the totality of what we breathe and what we create and what we essentially believe life to be in this portion of the cosmos.
So how do we know? How do we find it? How do we know that we found our note?
Thank you for the question. It's a fascinating one, isn't it?
It is. It's very important.
On one superficial level, I can say I don't know. And on another level, I can say, well, the way it goes is very simply, how does it feel when you fall in love? Just know. Exactly. We just know, you see.
Yes.
We just know.
Yes.
So when we find our note, we just know.
That's
so when
right.
we listen to those people whom we trust or whom we revere or whom we honor or whom we feel are inspirational in some way, if we really listen to them, we'll find that they're completely in tune with their note. So what this means for me is that the way that we've been educated and socialized in the Western world is that most of us live in our heads. So what this means is that automatically we live up here. Okay, now the whole of my being has changed.
Yes.
If I carry on talking to you like this, you're going to think I'm slightly mad because I've been using a very different vibration from this one. But you can see that I'm solely in the head. This is all about the fact that I use my intellect or my brain as a sort of machine to maneuver my way through 3D. But if I really open up the whole of my voice, it seemingly drops into a much deeper place where there's much more resonance. But it feels as though the sound is coming from my heart.
Yes.
So there's a very ancient proverb which says, if words arise from the heart, they will enter the heart. If words arise from the tongue alone, they will not pass beyond the ears.
Yes.
So this, I believe, is a way that we can begin to truly understand, beyond understanding, we can actually experience the way that people are literally in their hearts or not in their hearts. Now, sometimes our physiology gets closed, so all we need to do is to work on the possibility of what it is to relax, to work on the breath, to, you know, go to singing practice, whether it's in a choir or to a singing coach or to a vocal coach like myself, to just begin to open up what the breath is all about, which stimulates the musculature of our voices so they become more pliable, more flexible, more alive, and release the tensions to do with the inhibitions of I can't do it.
Yes, I know you talk a lot about the breath, and that's certainly, I personally connect to that because that's something I feel I need to work with, and I think many of us do, is there are just so many things to learn in that regard. And it's not something I've worked with, and I feel like it may be an element I'm personally missing, and maybe many of us are.
Well,
yes.
If you're anywhere near Los Angeles, next, not this weekend coming, but the following weekend, I should be in Los Angeles doing workshops.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, if you can, please come along to Los Angeles to the workshops.
Well, I don't know if I can get down there that quick, but I surely am interested in your work with that. I mean, because I have found that spirit does guide us, and I only recently started doing yoga, having never done it, I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that I was too uncoordinated to do it. Well, it turns out I wasn't too uncoordinated once you have the right teacher, and it's helping me already. I've been amazed by how much it helps. And I think for many of us, I've had a lot of respiratory issues in my life, allergies since I was a child. So many of us are in that situation. And maybe deep breathing or even just, you know, we had a tumultuous relationship with the breath, and that's probably been something that I'm now clearing away. So, in fact, I wonder if you could speak to that. Those of us who do speak and we have, you know, various things that impact the breath, how would you speak to that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I hear you very loudly and very clearly, and I feel that what you're saying is quintessential. Because after all, our breath is our life. It is effectively the very first thing that we do as we pour out of our mother's birth canal or are lifted from her belly. The very first thing that we do is to go, you know, and indeed the last thing that we do, hopefully in very peaceful circumstances, is to breathe out. And then we go through this remarkable adventure called death. And move back into the source. And, of course, there's a lot of information around at this time about what the source is and what dying is, which alleviates the entire perspective of how we live these lives and move towards our death. And, of course, what I'm referring to is NDE and the remarkable work of Anita Morjani and Eben Alexander, and other very extraordinary people around the world, like Pim van Lommel, who's one of the world's leading cardiologists, who you know, brought NDE to our attention through thousands and thousands of people who he worked with as a cardiologist, you know, who have had heart attacks and were pronounced dead, and they would come into his his operating theater, and they would wake up and tell extraordinary stories. However, the breath is pranayama, it is ruach, it is the holy wind, it is inspiration, it is the anima mundi. So the very first thing that we need to do, I believe, is to honor each breath that we take because it's keeping us alive. And what I've discovered is that most of us breathe very shallowly. We're so fearful of the force of life. And for very understandable reasons, because when we breathe in, we breathe the world into our beings. And when we breathe out, we breathe ourselves out into the world. Well, if the world is hostile, who wants to breathe it in?
So
and what
true.
I mean by that is, you know, if we have significant other around us who are violent, who are hostile, who are angry people, who are psychologically and emotionally controlling us, this can be our teachers or it can be members of the family or spouses or whatever, then we just don't breathe in. We hold our breath.
Yeah.
And the difficulty is this encourages and encroaches our fear within. But if we can breathe deeply, we can release that fear and then move back into the true substance of what our empowerment is all about. I make it sound very simple. I believe the truth is very simple. Doing something about it is a little bit more complex.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes time. So yes, the breath in and the breath out is absolutely quintessential. You know, going back to what you were saying at the very beginning as an introduction to the work that we have begun speaking of in relation to angelic sound healing and finding our note and so forth, that the majority of the people in the world are terrified about public speaking. So public speaking is the number one fear. You know, in other words, more people are more terrified of public speaking than they are of dying. And the statistics go public speaking, dying, the termination of a major relationship, whether that be divorce or death, and buying property. So
that's
more
amazing.
People would prefer to be in a coffin than making a eulogy.
That's amazing.
But if we can become aware of our breath, automatically what begins to happen is that we find a trajectory of creative potential within us that is so vast that it begins to endear people to us. You know, if words arise from the heart, they will enter the heart. Well, of course, immediately our voices become deeply magnetic, so people are drawn in rather than sent out. If I go here, you know, automatically the energy is very electrical and it sort of pushes people away. But if I speak here, it's very warm and vibrant and magnetic, so it draws people in. As we heard when we were babies listening to Once Upon a Time, there was a fairy prince and a fairy princess. And it's, you know, you can see young ones become spellbound by that.
So true.
The beginning is become healthy with breath. And there's a lot of information around breath today. And what I've discovered, and I say this with no arrogance, just simply with experience, that a lot of it is slightly inaccurate, because it's purely about breathing into the abdomen. Now, there's nothing wrong with breathing into the abdomen, but what we need to do is to open the whole physicality of the mechanism by opening the rib cage and then into the abdomen. So the diaphragm lowers very gently. And as a result of that, we begin to feel the nature of the doing aspect, the male, the masculine aspect of our being, the yang force, strengthening through the ribcage for the softening and the yielding of what takes place within the abdomen, which is very much to do with the feminine yin impulse. And when that feeling of being wide and deep with breath takes place, not just deep, but wide and deep, our larynx relaxes. The whole of the vocal tract becomes open, the tongue root releases, and we take on these really powerful, dynamic voices that are truly magical. As we hear in somebody like Barack Obama, I mean, what a voice is there.
Oh, yes, yes.
Whether we agree with his policies or not, what a voice.
Even when he was young, he had an amazing voice, and they had played one of his speeches from when he was very young, and it's phenomenal. As if it was innate in him.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question, an honest question I have often wondered about, is sometimes I have found that even doing this show, it's just the being of it seems to work, and that if I were to get too focused on the how, you see this out there, and I get the feeling you don't work this way, which is why I'm asking this question, is you'll get inundated with, oh, you have to do it this way, you have to do it this way, you have to do it this way, and then before you know it, it's like, I don't even know how to do the show. And if I just pretend I'm talking on the phone to Stuart, and that's what I'm doing, that's the magic of Blog Talk Radio, and I'm even doing it right now pretty much, although I'm a little conscious of it, which makes me, you know, a little more uptight than maybe I could be. But there's that business of being aware of the how, which then tends to maybe feel like it's detracting your authenticity to just being. I'm going to be here with you, Stuart. Do you see what I'm getting at? And how do we find that sweet spot? That's what I'm looking for.
Completely. I mean, the paradigm that I can use to illustrate what we're talking about is the nature of the actor. Acting is based on action. It's based on doing.
Yes.
But if an actor does, so to speak, do, that it becomes false, and that the actor needs to learn how to do and be. And once they be, the inner presence of soul opens. So I believe you see that what's happened in our lives is that the educational force that has impinged on us has often led us to believe that there is nothing but the intellect and the expediency and the competitiveness competitiveness of the intellect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very interesting that I a short while ago, to illustrate this, I looked at my emails, and I get a large number of emails from all over the world. And here was a gentleman saying that I had written on my website that Saturn was the furthest planet away from planet Earth, and that I was wrong, and that it was the sixth furthest planet away, and that the whole of my veracity as a master of voice, as a sound healer, and as an angel medium was in question as a result of this one single point. Now, for me, that's an absurdity, meaning it's imbalanced.
Yes.
Because he's not actually seeing that although the fact may be wrong, that why would that be, why would one simple thing like where Saturn is positioned literally pivot the whole of my authenticity and my integrity as the person who wishes to make the change in the world? You see what I'm saying, and I'm sure the listeners see what I'm saying.
Definitely.
It's based in craziness, isn't it? But there's the indoctrination of there's only one way, and this is this way.
Yes.
And, of course, we know that there are many modalities out there. There are many methodologies. And each methodology says there is only one way, and this is this way.
Yeah.
I say that's a load of crap. I say that there are many ways to God, not just one way. That there are many, 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 many there are many ways to the whole possibility of what it is to be successful. And so what we're seeing, very simply, in relation to what you were saying, is that firstly we need to prepare. If we fail to prepare, we prepare to fail.
Yes.
So we need to prepare ourselves, particularly in formal situations. But what we need to do once we've prepared ourselves, and you know we're taught very wisely today by profound social behaviorists or psychologists who say that in order to acquire a craft, it takes 10,000 hours of activity to become an expert in that craft. But then I believe, having prepared, what we need to do is just turn up and be.
Yeah.
And that's when the magic starts happening. So we go to rehearsal, we prepare ourselves really well, we learn our lines, we know where our mark is, we know who our fellow actors, what they're called, and how they look, and how we relate to them, and then what we do is we just turn up and have fun.
That's it. That's
and
so
isn't that
simple.
Really what we do when we're babies?
Yes, absolutely. That's the innocent that you talk about. It's just that passion of being where you're supposed to be. I can feel it.
Yeah. So I would suggest to you that I try to live this. Admittedly, I've been doing it professionally for some time, so I'm used to it. But it's something that I've always sought. You know, the two things that I've always sought in my life is looking into people's eyes and seeing that their hearts are open, and at the same time, turning up for really important conversations. Now, whether that's me standing in front of 1,000 people or having this really exquisite conversation with you, because we can feel the jewels that are hanging in the air between us.
Yes.
So this means that we're setting a resonance, you know, whether it's this conversation or me trying to do the same thing with 1,000 people, it's just a different energy. It's the same conversation. It's what's happening in this moment, and how do I respond?
Yes. Yes, I feel that. Just this notion of it's simply a conversation. And I also feel that, and this has helped me with preparation, and it's certainly in your work a great deal, is just that we're inseparable from the divine. I mean, I wonder if you could reflect on that, and that we have all the help that we could imagine, but simply to be us. That's what I love, is how we're just being us. I mean, we are very... We come from such different backgrounds, Stuart, and here we are just talking, And that's how it works. I mean, it's that simple. And yet I know that God is here, or the divine, or the spirit, or the universe, and that's so much in your work, the love of the divine, the compassion. It comes through so much.
Well, thank you, darling. Well, you see, I can only share with you in these beautiful thoughts that you've just uttered, and again remind us that as a result of the huge changes that have taken place effectively since the beginning of the 19th century about moving away from a very strong patriarchal control, which was filled with blind faith because it seemed that they knew better than us, whether it was our fathers or the king or the judge or the policeman or the teacher or the potentate or the priest or whomever. Now, we needed to extract ourselves from that because we were beginning to see the corruption in many power situations. We see this through the political history of our peoples. And, of course, I speak as a Western individual, so we just have to look at Europe to understand what that was all about. At the latter part of the 19th century, along came some very remarkable people. Sigmund Freud, Carl Jung were two, who started to explore the substance of truth within the intelligence of consciousness. Okay, they came up with their own opinions, but they at least began as waysharers, as vanguard, to take us in the direction of we need to stand alone. When we stand alone, we become powerful. Now, that was the initial stage. So what we've all done is to work on our solidarity of purpose. We've worked on our authenticity. We've found our note. We have discovered that the only way to be is if we're really being true to ourselves and fulfilling our destiny. But now we've reached this critical point where we're all recognizing that there's a huge neurosis to do with loneliness.
Yeah.
And so this, I believe, is why the angels are here. Because the angels are saying, no, 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 there's another degree, except they would never say no, 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 no. They just continue loving us until we are ready to receive their elixir. Because if you put another L in the word alone, it automatically becomes all one. So the negative vibration is that we are alone and isolated and frightened. The positive vibration is that we are all one together. And this is why the angels are here. They're here to remind us this, because they are actually consciously emboldened to be with us, to provide us with the lives that we want to live, the loves and the joys that we want to create. But they will not move until we ask them. They love for the sake of love. We tend to love for the sake of being loved. So we do stuff to encourage people to love us. What angels do is to love for the sake of love. So it's completely unconditional. And I believe that, you know, wherever we move through the world of mind, body, spirit today, we just see angels, angels, angels. Everybody's talking about angels.
It's true.
And, you know, and what I'm doing is my own contribution is presenting angels as these extraordinary forces, these orb creatures that are made of plasma. So it's lovely to think of an angel as being human beings with wings. But, you know, sorry, for me it just doesn't work. I think they're beautiful.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean to say that we can't see supernatural photographs of very remarkable beings that have wings. I myself have met 5 angels in human flesh in very remarkable situations where somebody's life was at threat, and suddenly a person stepped in, and the person had this luminosity about them that was just so powerfully magnetic, and automatically in loving, calm, easy tones circumvented the entire situation, which was life-threatening, where on one particular occasion somebody was having a violent heart attack, calmed the person down, the emergency vehicles arrived, the person was placed into the emergency vehicle, we turned around to say thank you, and there was nobody there. So, you know, there is this possibility that the power of the angelic communion can become humanoid, in the sense that they, you know, they take on the vessel of flesh to help us. But essentially, they are thoughts of God that bring the messages of the Great One, the Infinite One, to us. So they're here. I'm making it sound very simple. I feel it's a little bit more complex. But essentially, it seems that most of us have a huge problem with feeling alone. And what the angels are doing is saying, but you're never alone. You're never, ever alone. And, you know, in our peoples, arguably in the origins of Western civilization, I mean, that's what the books say. I believe that Atlantis and Lumeria and Mu came first before the Greek-Roman thought. But the Greeks didn't believe at all that they created it. They believed that their guardian angel created whatever it was they were creating. So Michelangelo prayed constantly to his genie, believing the genie gave him the genius.
Yes.
In Greece, the angel was known as the demon, which, of course, we've demonized. But actually, the demon is merely the familiar spirit, your guardian angel, because we each have a guardian angel that is with us from the moment we are conceived to the moment that we choose to go back into source. And if we can just ask our guardian angel to help, the fear ceases, the depression ceases, the disharmony and the dis-ease cease. I mean, obviously, we need to, in our own way, take responsibility for whom we are. But I believe that, you know, the council of the angelic practice is so vast. They promised me that we would see them. We're seeing them. They promised me that we would hear them. We're beginning to hear them. Through angelic sound healing, we can hear sounds above our chanting that are supernal sounds. They also said that we would smell them. And wherever I go when I'm working intensely in workshops, people say that there's a smell around me, which is not a bad smell, and it's not eau de cologne. It's the smell of roses.
Ah, yes. That's legendary in a way.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we have raced to the end of this show because I tell you, Stuart, we've just been talking, and I looked up, and we've got about 3 minutes left.
Oh, my goodness me. So we
in
have.
The live
that's
program.
Fantastic.
Yes, I know. Isn't that magical? That's part of the miracle of what you do and what we can create. But let me say first to the audience, it's thealchemyofvoice.com and theangelsofatlantis.com, I know, are your websites. And let me say, Stuart, thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, bless
for
you, darling.
Being
it's been so
here.
Wonderful. Thank you. When at some point in the future, let's do it again.
Oh, I would love it. There's so much to talk about. There's a great deal to your work. I joked, I took pages and pages of notes, you know, but I didn't need any of them. Because that's just, you know, as you say, be prepared. Well, sometimes the best way to be prepared is simply to be, like you say. So I'm just so happy that you were here with me today, and I appreciate that.
Darling.
And I would love to do it again.
Well, let's do that.
All right.
And I promise you I'm going to be spending much, much more time in the United States of America. And so, you know, let's meet up online.
Yes, and I will continue to explore your work because I know that it will not only help my audience, but personally, I love when I learn from my guests, and I learn from so many of you. So you have much, much to teach us all. So thank you so much again, and I hope you have a restful sleep recovering from your journey.
And thank you, darling. Thank you.
Pleasant dreams.
Much love and thank you. And much love and light to all the listeners.
Well, thank you. I know we all appreciate that. Much love back to you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, what a delightful conversation that was today. I'm so thankful to Stuart Pierce and to Finhorn Press for sending him our way. What an amazing person he is of the heart, and that's what counts. And let me remind listeners before the show goes down on the live feed that frontierbeyondfear.com is the place to go if you want to find this archived broadcast as well as upcoming shows. Really some wonderful guests coming up. And I invite you to go to that page where this show is currently highlighted, as well as links to his website so that you can explore Stuart Pierce's work at more depth which I really invite you to do. So thank you again, everyone, for being here today. The next show will be announced soon. There are some interesting things going on in the week to come, and so stay tuned to frontierbeyondfear.com for announcements on that. So take care, everyone, and may you find peace and that wonderful sense of relaxation and knowing that you know your note, or simply opening up to that possibility, that reality. Take care, everyone. Thank you.